You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about polyamory memes and how they might just change the world. Obviously, we all know what a meme is. And as we have moved more and more online and we communicate and get news and updates and ideas on social media, memes are wildly popular. There's an article in First Post, and this is a quote. As anyone who closely looks at internet culture would tell you, the impact of memes on our lives is undeniable. They're powerful tools in shaping and changing public opinion, so much so that they are increasingly important parts of political communication today at the grassroots level. Now, memes go viral. Sometimes their life is short, but a good meme is a meme that has a long life and continues to circulate throughout social media networks. And I don't know about you, but for me, when one person in my feed posts a meme, I usually see it then again several more times because I'm following like-minded people. And so people are reposting and reposting. And so we've got an expert on memes here, folks. That's what I'm going to call her. And she's going to have to step up to that. Leanne is the owner of Polyphilia, a sex-positive personal blog and meme page dedicated to polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, and personal growth in open relationships. She's also the audiobook narrator of 4 books on polyamory and hopes to make more audiobooks on polyamory accessible to a wider audience. She's been practicing ethical non-monogamy for 5 years and is keen to educate and raise awareness about the relationship style online. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Leanne.
Hello. I'm so honored to be here.
Okay, so you've been practicing non-monogamy for 5 years. What people may not know about you is that you're 22. So that's a long time. And that means that it dates back to your teens. And so, and I feel like you kind of represent this new generation of folks who approaches sex and relationships differently. So how did you first realize you were polyamorous or decide to become polyamorous? How did that happen when you were just a teenager?
Sure. Yeah. I was in my first relationship when I was 17 was a monogamous one. But then, how I got into non-monogamy was actually a bit of a sad story. My partner, he was bisexual and he cheated on me with a man. And he fessed up to me about it. So it wasn't like, you know, I found out or anything. He came clean to me. And when he told me about it, I was not mad about the fact that he slept with someone else. Like, rather, I was just upset that he hadn't trusted me enough to have a conversation about it. And I remember, you know, I was obviously very upset. And when he told me that, he'd slept with someone else, he slept with a guy, because, you know, he was, he gave some very bad reasons for it, but he was like, oh yeah, I want to explore my sexuality. I remember saying to him, I was like, you know, if you would just talk to me about this, I would have said yes, and it would have been fine. You know, we could have avoided all this. And he just looked at me like, hold on, like that was an option? And you know, obviously this had never even occurred to him. And it was kind of seeing that expression on his face, seeing his reaction to me, saying something that to me seemed like just something that made complete logical sense. I think that was the defining moment when I realized that, you know, I didn't think about relationships like other people did. I didn't kind of covet kind of exclusive, like sex, I guess, like in relationships, like, as, you know, like the primary thing. Like, I've always thought that trust was more important than monogamy. And I think growing up, monogamy didn't make a huge amount of sense to me. As to when I started properly identifying as polyamorous, I would say that'd probably be my early university years. So I'd be about 19 or 20 around this time. I think before that, like, I was kind of dabbling in open relationships and, you know, sexually open, romantically monogamous, kind of, that was my first kind of foray into non-monogamy. But I got into polyamory and started reading about it, and it just kind of made sense to me, you know, pursuing connections to the fullest potential and never having to, I guess, like, wonder what could have been, right, with, like, these people that you're attracted to. And I wanted to be authentic to myself. I wanted to, you know, just acknowledge the fact that even if I was in a relationship, my attraction to other people just didn't magically disappear. And I wanted to explore that. I wanted to satisfy my curiosity. And I didn't think that diminished my attraction to my existing partners at the time. And so, yeah, like, I started out in non-monogamy quite early on. I think earlier on than a lot of people. And I just kind of haven't looked back since. So yeah, here I am.
And what was the reaction of your peers? I mean, did you have support? Did you know other non-monogamous people at university?
I didn't know a lot of non-monogamous people initially. And I think that a lot of people, well, they saw me as unconventional. You know, some people made judgments about kind of my sex life, all very normal, kind of took it in stride. And you know, I kind of had to create my own community. You know, I founded the Polyamory Society at my university. Kind of, it's a very small community. It's only about, like, I would say about 30 of us who are, like, actually active. But it's really supportive. And I'm very lucky to be surrounded by people who are very open-minded and, you know, supportive. Even if the relationship style isn't something that necessarily works for them, like, they at least understand that it would work for other people. And yeah, so, you know, you be the change you want to seek, right? you just have to take the initiative to go out there and connect with people wherever possible. And of course, like, I've always been very active in the online communities in various ways. And that's kind of why I started doing, you know, this audiobook narration and creating this meme page. And that was just, you know, my attempts to just connect with as many other polyamorous folk as possible, because, you know, it's very difficult to find other people, like, of such a niche audience, especially in these times in the pandemic, when it's difficult to meet people regardless, never mind polyamorous people.
And so how did you come up with creating these memes and doing the blog? Like, what made you decide, oh, it's going to be memes and not, say, blog posts or articles or videos, or, like, why memes?
Sure. So my actual, like, my original idea was actually just to write a blog you know, just share, like, long form posts, just giving thoughts about the polyamorous lifestyle and kind of my experiences in it, kind of just generic advice, etc. And that was kind of started by just friends telling me that I should do it, because I was very active in a community, like Facebook groups and stuff anyway, just like commenting on various posts, giving my thoughts and opinions on things, and people enjoyed what I had to say. And so I just thought, oh, okay, you know, I'll just take that one step further and actually, like, set up a thing to talk about it. But then I realized that, you know, in the process of writing these posts, they weren't getting a huge amount of engagement. And I think that's because a lot of people just don't have the time or energy to just read through long paragraphs of posts. I mean, some people do, but for the most part, people, I think these days, with our short attention spans, right, they prefer to look at visual content that's very easy to process, you know, that they can just understand very quickly. They can just, you know, like and share, right? And I clocked this when, after sharing, I think I wrote about 4 or 5 blog posts, I decided to make a meme just to test it out. I made a meme, something about, I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was a meme about kind of like when you're on a date, and you realize in the middle of the date that the other person hasn't read your profile, and you're talking about your partners and they have no idea what you're talking about. I made a joke about that.
Right.
I posted this meme. It was like the surprised Pikachu face for anyone who is, you know, literate in meme culture. You'll know what I'm talking about. And it reached 100,000 people. And that was amazing to me. Like when that happened, like lots of people were like, oh my God, this is hilarious. I completely relate to this, you know? And, you know, it was such a, you know, you see that meme and you react to it in like 2 to 3 seconds and you're like, ah, you like and share. And it just reached so many people. And I thought, ah, all right, okay, this is the way to do it. This is the way to get engagement. This is the way to engage people in discussion and bring up important topics and, you know, do the work that I'd come here to do. So yeah, I kind of started out with a blog, but then changed to memes like very quickly, about like 2 weeks in. And since then, I've just been making a meme every day. You know, I queue up a bunch of memes like and just kind of, you know, post one every day. And it's been a huge success. You know, it was only November last year that I started it, but then, and it's been 2 months, almost 2 months now. And I'm almost at 3,000 followers on Instagram and approaching 6,000 on Facebook. So, yeah, it's really skyrocketed. And I think also there aren't a lot of pages that are kind of dedicated to making memes about polyamory. There are about two or three others. But then for the most part, I think a lot of the polyamory sites we see are just primarily about giving advice, right? Just spreading awareness, education, talking about like different polyamory terms, how to deal with jealousy, how to deal with metamors, very kind of high level topics like that. But there are very few pages that really engage in the, on a personal level, like the very down to earth kind of everyday experiences of a polyamorous person, and just kind of the good, the bad, the ugly, right? And so kind of my meme page was, you know, meant to kind of tap into that market, tap into just, you know, talking about polyamory and like how it affects your daily life. And you know, you can joke about the good things, you can joke about the bad, and yeah, just want to make people laugh and hopefully create a community around that.
So let's talk about some of your recent ones, because I do follow you.
Thank you.
Okay, so there's one that says, when someone asks if you're single and you're trying to explain your poly, and the screenshot is from The Good Place.
Yeah.
And Chidi says to Eleanor, well, I've narrowed it down to two possibilities, yes and no. Well, first of all, you love The Good Place, because there's a lot of Good Place memes. Okay, so tell me why you love The Good Place, because I also adore that show.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all about its ethics and comedy, and it's just like the characters are so amazing, right? And like, you know, I could talk about The Good Place forever. I've seen it twice. Like, I've recommended it to literally everyone. I remember when I first watched it, I binged like 9 episodes in a row. It's just such a well-written show. I love everything Michael Schur creates. Here's the thing about memes, right? Because like, you know, I take these screenshots from popular shows. And the thing about the polyamorous community, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of people are very nerdy. They're very geeky.
Yeah,
exactly. And people love Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, like Lord of the Rings. And so it's kind of appealing to those niches, right? So like when I create like my most recent meme was like a Lord of the Rings one, and you know, it's just combining people's like two favorite things, where someone loves Lord of the Rings and also loves polyamory, and they see that mashed together, like, ah, amazing. I can see this, like, you know, this quote from the movie, but like in a polyamorous context. Fantastic. And so it's kind of, you know, bring communities together in that sense as well. And sometimes like I see my memes being shared, like in some of my Good Place memes have been shared in like a Good Place meme page, and like it started conversations about polyamory there. So it's kind of traversing like those kind of spaces as well, and going into not, and kind of going outside of the polyamorous bubble, so to speak, on the internet. So that's been really, really, really helpful as well.
Oh, that's fascinating. Right. So people who are really into The Good Place and are maybe into Good Place memes, right, are on the lookout. Mm-hmm. And then yours happens to have maybe a different message than a lot of other ones.
Yeah.
But I love that it can cross over, that pop culture becomes this kind of bridge, right?
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
We can all relate to, and then actually engage the material, engage like the message of the meme.
Yeah, there was one really popular Good Place meme that got shared in a Good Place shirt posting group. It was a picture of Tahani, and like basically it's like her looking really upset, and she's saying, I just want to sit and stare at nothing and silently scream for the rest of time. And the caption is, when your 729th Tinder match ghosts you after you mention you're polyamorous.
Right.
That one did really well on Facebook. And like that kind of that got shared into the Good Place shirt posting, and like a bunch of people were like, talking about like dating while polyamorous, like talking about like, oh, whether you should mention that you're polyamorous or not in your dating profiles, kind of a lot of important discussions around that. I also do a lot of kind of social commentary as well. So apart from just like, you know, taking quotes from shows and kind of putting a polyamorous spin on it, most recently, obviously you must know about what happened on the 6th at the Capitol. Yes. And like the day after, I think it was like NYC Mag. I can't remember which. There was an article that came out about Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was shot at the Capitol. And it was only in passing. It was only a very, very small line. Basically they interviewed her loved ones, and there was a woman who described herself as the mutual live-in girlfriend of Ashley Babbitt and her husband. And this went viral on Twitter because someone highlighted that paragraph, shared it to Twitter, and was like, oh my God, the woman who shot the Capitol, this Trump supporter, she was in a polyamorous triad. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, because I think a lot of people who are polyamorous assume, like, well, usually it's kind of a left-wing thing, right?
Right, so it was very shocking. It's progressive people are the people who are practicing it.
Yeah, 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 that is the tendency, right? And, you know, that stereotype is not untrue. So it was obviously very shocking to a lot of people that there was a conservative who was in such a progressive arrangement, so to speak. And basically, like, this kind of generated a lot of conversation because obviously a lot of people were like, well, you know, not all polyamorous people are good people, obviously. So that was an interesting conversation. But there was also a lot of people who were kind of complaining about this news coming out because they were like, oh no, now everyone's going to think that all polyamorous people are Trump supporters, or, you know, we get enough bad press already and this was just such a blow for us, you know, this was not the polyamorous exposure that I asked for. And people were just, you know, there was a bit of doom and gloom about that. You know, it was a blow. I was very sad about that, but I saw that news and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna make a joke out of it. And basically I posted two memes that day, and one of them was just a joke about like polyamorous representation. And the meme was the polyamory representation we want. And then there's a picture of Sense8 from Netflix. I'm sure you know the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then below that, the polyamory representation we got. And then there's a picture of Ashley Babbitt. And there's also a picture of the guy from Tiger King.
I forgot. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because that was also another thing. Because everyone's just like, "Oh my god." Yeah. Like, why? You know, all the people. Like, why that guy? Yeah. And that did so well. It's still getting shared now. It's like approaching 600 shares now, which is mad. And so yeah. And so people were able to laugh about that. People were able to be like, "Oh, like, you know, I wish we had better polyamorous representation." People started recommending shows that had good polyamorous representation in the comments. People started talking about in niche communities like this, it's kind of, you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you assume that like everyone there is a good person, and it's kind of utopia, right? Because I think there's a tendency in the polyamorous community for some people to kind of see themselves as more enlightened or evolved than monogamous people, and this news coming out basically just dashed that to pieces because, well, that completely disproves it, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think this news like really created a lot of important conversations, and kind of my meme kind of contributed to that, like kind of sparking those important discussions. And I find that because these memes are so easy to process, people can engage with them easily and kind of share their thoughts about it. Like, I make a lot of memes that are like kind of semi-political, like things about unicorn hunting, veto power, the one penis policy, like things that people talk a lot about in the community. Sometimes I share about negative experiences you have like in polyamory. For example, if you don't get along with your metamor, if you're suffering from a jealousy attack, if you have multiple breakups over a short space of time, and things like that. You know, normally there's a lot of doom and gloom in these support groups, and people are just like complaining about their experiences, but like making a meme out of it injects some kind of levity into the conversation, and people are able to kind of laugh about it while also sharing their experiences and finding other people who relate to that experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point, that it's a kind of, it's digestible and it's funny. Mm. And so it may be an easier way for people to step into a conversation about something that's tough or difficult or taboo. I mean, you know, because polyamory is still is taboo, in at least in Western cultures. And so I think that's a really good point. Like it's a way, like not all people learn in the same way and not all people can access a conversation from the same point. So I feel like it meets a lot of people where they are. Okay, we got to take a break. We got to take our first commercial break.
Okay.
But this all is so fascinating. Okay. shout out to my amazing sponsors who make the show possible. And we will be back with Leanne. Stay with us. You know, the natural process of aging, high impact exercise, and childbirth take a toll on the health of the muscles that surround the vagina, causing them to stretch and lose tone. Toned pelvic muscles are the key to making penetration feel better, giving you more intense orgasms, and by the way, great bladder control. Trust me, one of these days, you will cough and pee a little, I'm just saying. Forget all that vaginal rejuvenation surgery. All you need to do is your Kegels. And Intensity by Pormois makes doing them easier by tightening and toning the pelvic floor muscles. Pormois is offering our listeners an additional $25 off of Intensity when you go to pormois.com and enter the code Tristan at checkout. You can use this code along with any code on their website. That's $25 off on top of all ongoing promotions when you go to pormoi.com and use promo code TRISTAN. Pormois.com, promo code Tristan. Intensity by Pormois, Kegels with a kick. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. My guest today is Leanne, who is joining us all the way from the UK and who runs Polyphilia, a sex-positive personal blog and meme page dedicated to polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, personal growth, and open relationships. So before the break, we talked a lot about representation. And I think that that's a really another interesting point about this is that representation matters. We know that. And when we don't have enough representation of a certain subculture or community, then when we do have it, we have all these expectations that it's going to be perfect. It's going to speak to all of our experiences. We're going to be able to identify with it. It's going to sort of be shiny and happy and positive, right? That's kind of the thing about the woman at the Capitol, right? Is that we thought, oh my God, we don't have enough poly representation to begin with. And now we have this documented person, polyamory, who's also an insurrectionist, like it's and a white supremacist and a Trump follower. It's like awful. But I think at the same time, if there is conversation like generated by these, I mean, that's what's kind of fascinating about the memes are great, but then you're telling me there's engagement with the memes. And I think engagement is one of the hardest things to get people to do online because everyone has a really short attention span. Yeah. And they're sort of like scrolling, 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 liking, liking, liking. And so when someone stops and says, okay, wait, this resonates with me or I have feelings about this, like that's when I feel like you can get people talking about these sometimes difficult conversations.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely with the Ashley Babbitt thing. I think the main thing that came out of that was, you know, people having conversations about, well, you know, this seems very obvious to us now, but I think it's important to say, like, you're not all polyamorous people are good people. And like, you know, when obviously it's very good that the polyamorous community is very good at kind of calling out problematic behavior when it arises. But I think what kind of like an unfortunate consequence of that is that whenever something bad happens, you know, when someone does something like that's deemed like unethical, the polyamorous community is very quick to reject them and go, they're not one of us. That's not polyamory. That's not ethical polyamory. And, you know, they're not part of us. And it's just kind of like, this brings up the discussion of like, where's the line, right? Because how are you to kind of judge someone's behavior, like within polyamory or outside of polyamory? And just, you know, while in monogamy, right, you don't have these conversations. Like, you know, if someone cheats on their partner, you're like, oh, they're not a monogamous, they're not kind of part of us, right? But within these niche communities, there is much more pushback against such behavior, because I think when you're part of a niche community that has a lot of, you know, which is taboo and has a lot of judgment from like the majority of the population, you're very keen to kind of present yourselves as like a positive kind of group, right? You want to kind of create the impression that like not all of you are bad people, because the moment someone comes out and, you know, just painting all of you with a kind of tarnished brush, that's it for you. And, you know, like that's just kind of the impression that someone is going to have of the entire group of people based on their impression of a single person. So yeah, like the Ashley Babbitt thing really kind of just brought these discussions to the fore. And there was a lot of engagement in the comments just talking about this, and, you know, people talking about like conservative polyamorists they knew, and how like some people were surprised by news, some people were not so surprised. And yeah, just generally, it was an interesting conversation because people were kind of interpreting my memes differently as well. And so lots of different discussions would kind of bounce off of that, I guess, springboard.
And the other thing that I notice you do, and which memes can do in general, is to correct misconceptions. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, there are a lot of them out there about non-monogamy and polyamory. You know, people have... there's sort of a mythology around it and people's assumptions about it. We're all in orgies. We're all swinging from the chandeliers, you know, all that stuff. So memes are also a way to sort of to correct those, but without being sort of preachy, doing it in a funny way.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think people tend to take things like much easier. Like if it's kind of like, you know, tone is very important, delivery is very important, and I think like you can really get through to a lot of people just through humor. Well, I like to kind of turn stereotypes like on their head a little bit. Well, obviously, you know, like you said, when people hear the word polyamorous, they often assume like, oh, it's like the same as swinging. It's like all about sex, etc., etc. And I've actually kind of personally called out the polyamorous community sometimes like for kind of veering on the other end of the spectrum and actually being quite sex negative, because I think the conversation around, the conversation around going like, oh, polyamory is not about the sex. We're not like, you know, those swingers, right? We're not like, we're all about the love, right? And like, okay, cool. But then, you know, I think what that actually does, the unfortunate consequence of this is that you actually do end up accidentally slut shaming people who do prioritize sex in their relationships as kind of part of their love and part of how they do polyamory. I identify as polyamorous, but I am also a swinger. I love casual sex. I am, you know, like I self-identify as a slut. And so, you know, I do kind of fit those stereotypes, I guess. So then when people are just talking about like, oh, you know, I would never do that. You know, I'm not easy. I don't sleep around. I am poly. I am love. Like there was like a meme that was shared around that literally said that. It was like, I am not easy. I don't sleep around. I am poly. I'm in love. And I just saw that. And I was like, that, no. And, you know, I talk about that like on my page as well. And actually I made a meme recently from like,
is so this the comedian? Like a, is this Ali Wong? Because I love that one. Oh my god, that's one of that my one. Favorite ones.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, that means a lot. So for those of you don't, who don't know, there's Ali Wong, amazing comedian. So as an Asian person myself, like I really, really massively look up to her because I just love that. Like there's this Asian comedian who, you know, looks so typically Asian, but then just talks about such vulgar topics, and it's amazing. It's just so liberating to see her talk about these things. But yeah, she's an amazing comedian, and so she talks about like being Asian, and she's very open about her sex life. And basically at one point in one of her comedy shows, she says, she's talking about, I think the context was, so she's Asian and she's bad at driving, so she like fulfills that stereotype. And whenever she's trying to parallel park, there are always these people who are trying to like help her park because like they see that she's Asian, assume she's bad at driving, and then help her out. And she's like, these people are so helpful, but they're also like so racist. And basically she said the line, fuck you, for assuming correctly about me. And basically, I took that line and I created the meme and said, when people assume I'm a slut because I'm bisexual and polyamorous, and there's Ali Wong going, fuck you for assuming correctly about me.
No, this is a great piece because I agree with you that sometimes in service of making polyamory seem wholesome or digestible or something, we swing the other way and say it's not about sex. I mean, it's one of the things I talk about in my workshops all the time, especially for clinicians and healthcare providers. Sometimes it is about the sex, and that's a totally valid reason for being non-monogamous. And we can't sort of prioritize love over sex. In fact, that's like old monogamous ways of thinking. You know what I mean? It's like even though we're sort of, you know, we're living in this sort of radical bubble of questioning monogamy, there's still monogamous and also just societies in general, like sex phobic standards that seep in, right? And that and so there is slut shaming even within a community that there shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And like sex is just so important to talk about in general, right? Because undeniably, it is a very big part of a lot of people's love lives. You know, so for some people, they are inextricably linked. And so it seems kind of nonsensical to me, kind of brush it off and go like, oh, yeah, we're not about that. We don't talk about that. And to kind of see casual, like kind of sexual relationships as, you know, meaningless or frivolous, right? And because like you said, like they do make up a huge part of a lot of people's lives, and so we should be having conversations about sex in polyamory. We should be openly speaking about safer sex practices, and you know, like the kind of sex we like to have, consent, etc., etc. There's a lot of things like within kind of sex that really influences like how we do relationships, and so there are lots of important conversations there that like we should be having. And you know, apart from memes, right, I said I also make long form blog posts, although I only post about maybe twice a month, and one of my most popular articles was about slut shaming in the polyamorous community, like where I specifically call this out, and I'm just like, you know, this is not okay. Like, why are we kind of regressing back into like the very thinking that we're trying to fight against, right? Not that there's anything not wrong with monogamy, but then kind of monogamous culture, mononormative culture, is, you know, it's very prevalent and pervasive, and we need to kind of check ourselves basically when we have conversations about these things.
So we talked about humor, which is one of the strengths of memes, especially now. It's nice to just find something in your feed that makes you smile or makes you laugh out loud, like for 1 minute, considering there's a lot of doom and gloom in the world. But not all of your memes are funny. Sometimes you do take a different tone. And I'm wondering about that when you feel like, okay, this I want to tackle this particular subject and I don't think I'm going to use humor this time. Like, tell me about that.
I don't do it like deliberately, but I think it's just like I see a quote from a TV show or I see a meme format and I'm like, oh, I could start an important conversation about this. Because yes, I do want to entertain most of the time, especially like in the pandemic when, you know, people really need a laugh right now. But then ultimately, like, I want to start important conversations about various facets of polyamory, if not through like my long blog posts, then like through like easy to process, digestible visual content. So, I've made a lot of kind of semi-political memes like about like various controversial topics, and when people talk about hierarchy or veto power and things like that, and I think like they don't do as well. People sometimes get a little bit riled up at the stuff I post sometimes, but then I think ultimately like they serve a purpose with kind of, well, engagement, right? And community and like people kind of relating to each other about experiences. So example, like very early on, when I just started my meme page, a friend of mine went through several breakups in a very short space of time, which is kind of the polycule kind of collapsed in on itself. It was a very difficult time for them. And I made a meme about just kind of multiple breakups, basically. It was like I'll find it. It was another Good Place meme. As you can tell, I love this show. and it's basically it's Ted Danson and Darcy Carden next to each other, and they're going, is everything okay? I mean, other than, you know, everything. And the caption is me comforting my friend who just went through three breakups at once. I made that meme kind of while dedicated to my friend because like they were going through such a tough time. And I was like, hey, I started this meme page. I made this meme about your experiences. Here it is. And that kind of brought a smile to their face. And, you know, I posted it online and there are a lot of people like talking about like, you know, the experiences that they'd had as well. Like, you know, because when you take on the risk of more relationships, you also take on the risk of more breakups. Mm-hmm. It's not all fun and games and sunshine and rainbows, right? So people were talking about, oh yeah, like this was me like a while ago. This is how I dealt with it. People were sharing kind of advice on like how not to have that kind of domino effect with multiple breakups. I personally talked about like the polyamory breakup book by Kathy Labriola, which specifically deals with this issue.
It's a good one.
I love that book. I love that book to pieces. Cheeky plug, I narrated the audiobook version of that book. So, you know, I'm very invested in that book because I read every single word.
Yes.
Sad and I guess like not so funny topics, people are still able to have community, right? Because people mm-hmm. are, you know, they see this and they're like, oh, I'm not alone. This is, you know, you feel that sense of belonging. I think that's the main thing. I think just like being open about these, the not so good side of polyamory means that people can have honest conversations about, you know, how it isn't all fun and games. Yeah, just kind of share the experiences, share tips, and just, you know, find like connection like on the internet. And I think that's kind of what my page's purpose is. And like, you know, I'm very happy to fill that role.
Okay, we're going to take another break, hear from our sponsors. I have so many more questions. We're going to get to some of them, hopefully, when we get back. So don't go anywhere. Everyone needs a little escape, but those can be really hard to come by right now. Enter Dipsy. Let yourself get lost in a world where amazing things happen and where your pleasure is the only priority. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. Each Dipsy audio story features characters that feel like real people and immersive scenarios, so you feel like you're right there. And they cover the gamut of gender pairings. Listen to stories about hooking up with your hometown crush that you never made a move on, or that coworker you've always had a little thing for, or maybe a story that puts you in bed with someone who's telling you exactly what they'd like to do to you. They release new content every week, so there's always more to explore, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. For listeners of Sex Out Loud, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to Dipsy Stories, D-I-P-S-E-A stories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. I promise you're going to love it. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today about memes, especially around polyamory, non-monogamy, and open relationships with one of the current reigning queens of those memes, Leanne, who is the owner of Polyphilia. So, Leanne, I'm wondering if your finger's clearly on the pulse here, right? You're creating these memes that are really speaking to people. So I kind of want to hear from you what you think we are still not talking openly about or talking enough about when it comes to consensual non-monogamy.
I think that, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, one thing that people really shy away from is sex and kind of slut shaming, like within the polyamorous community. Like, we talk a lot about getting judgment from other people, like who are not E&M, right? But then I think a lot of people don't try to kind of brush under the carpet the kind of infighting that does occur in the community. I think that's one topic. I think another thing that really is a bit of a touchy one is hierarchy. I think that, you know, a lot of people like aspire towards kind of non-hierarchical arrangements and, you know, it's all like well and good. We don't practice veto power, blah, blah, blah. But then I think sometimes...
Hang on one sec. I do want to define veto power and I want to define hierarchical just for people who may not know, who are like just coming into this conversation. So tell people what it means to have a hierarchical relationship in poly.
So in polyamory, some people distinguish between hierarchical and non-hierarchical relationships. So in a hierarchical relationship, usually one person is your so-called primary. They are your first priority, and oftentimes like they are the person you you know are married to, have kids with, etc. And then every other romantic relationship you have is secondary. So then you have a more perhaps like a more casual relationship with them, or, you know, you wouldn't necessarily put them first in the way that you would your primary. You kind of defer to your primary for like major decisions, like, you know, major kind of life events and that kind of thing. You might not introduce your secondary to your family, et cetera, et cetera. And some couples kind of set rules around limiting interactions with secondary partners. And then there's non-hierarchical polyamory, where you basically don't do that. You basically treat each relationship as, you know, independent in its own right. Any decisions that are made by the two people in that relationship. And it's basically, it aspires towards a much more egalitarian kind of arrangement and more, I would say, kind of, you have the freedom to pursue connections to their fullest potential instead of like worrying about like what your primary would say on like a certain matter. And veto power, which is another term that's used a lot, is basically a rule that some couples, usually in hierarchical arrangements set up, where you give your partner the power to veto the people you date. So this could be, for example, you're dating someone new and then your primary doesn't like them. And so they say, you're not allowed to see that person anymore. Or if you're like in, you know, in the throes of like NRE with someone, or for example, like you're already in a relationship with someone and your primary doesn't get along with them, or, you know, there's some drama basically that occurs, like they'll have the final say on whether you can continue that relationship with the secondary partner or not. So like the veto power is just basically like having the power to like force your partner to break up with someone else. And this is generally considered unethical because, well, it's generally frowned upon to kind of control relationships that you're not in. And also doesn't achieve its ultimate purpose, because even if you ask your partner to break up with someone else, they're still going to have feelings for that other person. And, you know, usually from what I've seen, resentment ends up like building up in the primary relationship, because ultimately when you exercise veto power, you're not only hurting the third party who just got pushed out, but also your own partner who, you know, just lost someone who they very much cared about. So yeah, that's kind of my definition of things. Is there anything you'd like to add, Tristan?
Oh no, that's great. And so you think there still is not enough discussion about this?
Yeah, and I think particularly, I think when people are in non-hierarchical setups, I think there is this tendency for some people to just straight up ignore these inevitable hierarchies that do exist. So, you know, we talk a lot about couples privilege and how to dismantle it, et cetera, et cetera. But I think privilege isn't something that you can just do away with. It's something that is there and you have to be aware of it and kind of mitigate it wherever possible. But it's not something that like you can just get rid of, right? And I think ultimately there is going to be some kind of implicit hierarchy if you do things like get married to someone, if you live with someone, if you have children with someone. These are kind of unavoidably matters that you will have to discuss with other partners in terms of like how much time and attention you can give them without kind of compromising like the boundaries of like what you already have with existing partners. And I think that in non-hierarchical arrangements, what people don't talk about enough is just these implicit hierarchies that do exist. Because if you're like, oh, we're non-hierarchical, but then these hierarchies just kind of end up affecting your relationship anyway, and you just brush it under the carpet and don't talk about it, that doesn't end up serving anyone, really. And I think people just don't talk about this enough because in favor of having this like beautiful egalitarian poly arrangement. So yeah, that's my thoughts on hierarchy, basically. I think it's an important subject to be discussed and sometimes just unavoidable.
Right. And I think it's interesting because we can talk about non-hierarchy on the micro interpersonal level, but then our society does revolve around hierarchies, right? And that is kind of baked into our systems, which is why they're so oppressive. But we're all still operating under the guidelines of sort of normative society. And so this stuff is going to rear its head whether we like it or not. You know, I think that that's a really good point, that that in some cases it's unavoidable. And so it's about awareness of it rather than sort of like brushing it aside and being like, we don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you just kind of pretend it's not there, it becomes the elephant in the room, so to speak.
Right. So do you think memes are a tool of the revolution?
Oh, what a question.
I know, it's a softball to end on.
Oh my gosh. I think that memes can be very instrumental to kind of socio-political change. I've definitely seen kind of memes like being like shared on social media because they're so easy to share. Like I said, you know, you process it so quickly and then it's very easily digestible and you just share it far and wide. And it's a very easy way to kind of spread information and awareness. And people can use that to kind of further whatever purposes or motivations they have, right? I mean, for me, it's about educating and spreading awareness, particularly among my age demographic, because like literally over 70% of my followers, according to my insights anyway, are like in the 18 to 34 kind of age bracket. So it's kind of like spreading awareness and, you know, educating about polyamory in that kind of sphere. Whereas for other people, like they can use memes to express their political opinions. And, you know, like there are lots of kind of memes that originated on like sites like 4chan or whatever. Like the, I don't know, like the Wojak meme, for example, if you know about that one, like those very reductive kind of drawings, like those originated on 4chan. And of course they've been subverted in leftist spaces these days. But I think that, I don't know if memes are the kind of forefront of the revolution, but I think they can definitely be used as a tool, like just like anything else on the internet, to further change and spark conversations, just because they are so easy to share and they're so easy to process and so easily accessible. That's my thoughts on the matter.
Thank you so much for having this conversation. You know, I want to tell people, I got a cold email from Leanne. Leanne basically like wrote to me and said, hey, I'm doing this thing. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's important. I have a lot to say about it. I want to be on your show. And I think, you know, people don't realize that you can pitch yourself to be on my show. And if your pitch is compelling, yeah, I want to talk to you. So I want to put that out there that, people think there's like this mysterious process or like I'm dealing with people's agents or, and sometimes someone comes along and just makes a really compelling argument. And I'm like, wow, that interests me. That intrigues me. Let's do it. So I appreciate you reaching out and saying, hey, let's talk about this because it's been a great conversation.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed speaking to you. You're a great interviewer.
So you can find the blog at polyphiliablog.wordpress.com and at polyphiliablog on Facebook. Is it
at polyphiliablog.
Blog, right, okay. And at polyphiliablog on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks so much, Leanne.
Thank you.
I want to shout out my engineer and editor, A-Rod at FTC Designs, who you can follow on Twitter at FTC_designs. New episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. We love it when you review the podcast on your favorite platform and it helps people find it. And you can find me across all social media platforms at Tristan Terramino. Take care.